what I'm trying to do is cover. I will take questions at the end. I would like to stick to questions on the topic. We're going to talk about that because, you know, obviously kashrus is this very wide range of questions which could be out there, and we could do that. We could, you know, stay here the whole night talking about kashrus questions. So let's just focus in on basically the topic I want to talk about. I want to talk about, since it's right before Shavuos, so we're looking at the milchik fleishig oven. That's the main, the main area we're looking at is the milchik fleishig oven. So talk about ovens in general, how they go, how we define an oven, milchik fleishig, what are the issues of, that a person has to be aware of in an oven. From there, I want to go onto the, what do you call it, the stove top, the range, what do you, how do you refer it to, the burners, whatever word I use, and you're not sure what I mean, I probably mean the other one. Also the issue of milchik and fleishig on that point in time. We'll talk about some spices and those type of things, and we'll talk about also microwaves. Milchik fleishig in the microwaves. And we could do all of that in about 20 minutes. Okay, thank you for laughing. we'll see. Hopefully, and try and get it all in. When we're talking about the usage of defining what the issues are, issues which are, come up when the person is dealing with an oven, so there are probably three issues that we have to look at in halacha. The first one is we have to make sure that there's no actual touching between milchik and fleishig. Which would apply if there's a residue of a milchik or a fleishig in the oven, and you have to be careful in your oven that you're not putting down something now which is of the other gender from milchik to fleishig and vice versa. So that would maybe behoove us to designate our oven in one direction, and that's you know, one issue which a person has to look at. The other two issues in halacha which are not as well known, that one's pretty fairly obvious. Is the second issue which is out there in halacha is the issue which is known as recha. Recha means smell. And we know that in general smell is not a problem in halacha. Smell of something which is also is not a problem. Except if something is isuri hanoa. Isuri hanoa is theoretically a problem. It's by smell. But with something which is achila, the smell is not a problem. I mean, we have this problem, you might have experienced this at some point in your life, walking by a bakery, a non-kosher bakery, and smelling it, it's not a problem to take a whiff of the non-kosher bakery. There's no problem. The item isn't there. There's no problem with smelling them. It's not a problem. Walking by a non-kosher bakery on Pesach and smelling the chametz, that's a more interesting question. Argument to that still possibly would not be a problem is if you should not intentionally take a whiff, though. Walking by a base of Avodah Zorah and they're having their incense going, and that would be more of a, that is actually a problem. Anyway, the reich in general is not a problem. Does it apply to an oven or not? And it actually does, in some ways, it does apply to an oven where reich can be a problem. And the third issue is the issue of zeya, which is known as steam. And when is zeya a problem? When is zeya not a problem? So there is a concept in halacha that the steam which comes out of a food item gets the same halacha as the food item itself. It's of a milchik of food, so then the steam is considered milchik. If it's a fleishik of food, the steam is considered fleishik. It's not just water vapor, and it's not, you know, and your scientist will tell you it's only water vapor, and it's not really the food itself, and it's not a problem. Halacha does not look like that. The vast majority of poskim, including the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which is who we base the follower halacha, do look at zeya as a problem. So, and that obviously can play itself out. So we have to define tonight what's considered zeya that we're worried about, and what type of zeya we're not worried about. Not all zeya is really considered halachically zeya. You know, this minute amount of steam coming up, it's not necessarily a problem. Okay, so let's start. So those are the issues that we're going to be looking at, trying to cover tonight. Let's start for if we could theoretically have our druthers, and we would like to have set up our. We're building a new home, and we're setting up this wonderful kitchen. So obviously, we'd make two ovens. We'd have a milchik oven. We'd have a fleishik oven. If you're really firm, we'd have three ovens. We'd have a parva oven. We wouldn't have any problems, and we would have like three sinks and three refrigerators and three everything, three microwaves. You know, no money was no object. We would do all that. We don't have that reality, and obviously, we're going to have an issue. So that's not going to be an ASA for all of us, for the vast majority of us wonderful people. What should I do? So let's start with the preferred way of setting, assuming that I have one oven, and it's not a self-clean oven. We'll start with a non-self-clean oven, and then we'll go to a self-clean oven. If I have a non-self-clean oven, the best thing to do is make my oven one gender. Which gender? The gender which I usually use. So I usually cook fleishigs, I'm not allowed to cook fleishigs. I should designate my oven as a fleishig oven. That means that I can now cook in this oven open. Fleishigs will be open. There's no question of having the fleishigs covered. I can cook my fleishigs. I can cook my chicken and my turkey and whatever I want to cook open without any worries, and that's not a problem. Now, I want to cook one time. I want to come along. I want to bake something, which is milchig, and I want to make milchigs in this fleishig oven. So what in the world can I do? Or I want to bake something which is part of which I'm going, I want to then use with milchik. I want to bake a cake which I want to serve by a milchik of shoshudas. I want to bake challah. When what can I do if I have now my oven is fleishig? Now obviously, if somebody was, you know, it's very much into milchiks, and they could do the same thing the other way around. They could say their oven is milchiks, and what do? We want to bake something which is fleishigs. So, what are the issues? So let's start with number one. I want to go back to Recha. Recha and Halacha, so obviously it has to be clean. Let's go back to the first issue, Negiyah. It has to be clean. So I want to now, if my oven is fleishig, and I want to make something which is going to be parah, or milchik, I have to make sure that the oven is clean. So if the oven is clean, so then I don't have any issues of this potentially milchik thing touching fleishig. Alternatively, if I'm just dealing with the issue of where my food is touching the racks. Not touching the sides of the oven. It's not touching the bottom of the oven. It's just touching the rack. So if I'm worried about the cleanliness of the racks, I could put down a layer of foil and it's not touching the racks anymore. So if I want to solve the problem of negiyah, of touching, the solution is very simple: to cover the racks. Do you need to double layer it? You do not need to double layer it. It's beneficial to double layer it. You do not need to double layer it. There are cases where you do need to double layer, and we'll talk about those, but for this, the issue is just the negiyah part, just touching it. There's nothing which is liquidy there, there's no liquid there at this point in time. You don't see anything which is liquid, but you see the little mushes there. You cover it over. It's dry. The bottom of the pot is dry. Everybody's wonderful, and that's all you need to do. Okay, that deals with the issue of touching. The next issue in halacha is the issue of recha. Recha in halacha says that if you cook two things simultaneously, even though you do not see any steam at all coming out from one to the other, the smell goes from one to the other. We pass in halacha that recha is also the chatchila. It's mutar b'diavad. It's recha is also the chatchila, which means the chatchila, I cannot cook in my oven fleishigs and milchigs together. That's going to be a problem because there's a recha issue. Even though I don't see any steam, there's a problem of recha. B'diavad, recha is mutar. If you're dealing with an oven which has an opening in it. So our ovens have openings, they have vents, that's not a problem. Microwaves becomes much more of a problem because they don't have that opening, some of them. They're closed, and therefore microwaves are more of a problem. Average microwave, you're not doing milchiks and fleishigs at the same time anyway. In other words, this would come up theoretically. It's shavuos, and you're putting some things into the oven, you're having a fleishig of milchik of kiddush and a fleishig of meal, you need to get everything to the oven, and you get great, so I'll put in some milchik things and fleishig things into the oven at the same time. So I said, well, what can I do that? So my first issue, obviously, again, is the negiyah problem. So I can't make sure they're not going to touch. Okay, what about splattering? Well, so I have to worry, halacha says that you're not mechuyev dechoshes for it, but you have to be logical also. If you put it right next to each other, you're going to have a problem, one thing touching the other. So keep them distant apart. What about the Ramos says, are we worried about something, flowing from one and touching the other? If they're on the rack, in general, it doesn't flow on a rack, it just drips down, it's not going to move over to there. But I have the problem of recha. Right? So recha is not a problem if they're covered. So if I have my fleishig covered and my milchik open, or I have my milchik and my fleishig covered, one of them is covered, I'm okay.
Only one of them?
Even one of them is covered. I need one to be covered to solve the problem of reich. Okay, so here I am again. My oven is a fleishig oven, so I'll say, great, I'll keep the fleishig open, I'll cover the milchik, that's wonderful. That's not a problem. So we're good, we've taken care of the reich problem. Even at the same time, reich only applies to when they're at the same time. Okay, now I have challah. I want to warm up the challah, and it's very geschmack. I can have nice, hot, steaming challah, and I'll put in the challah together with my fleishigs, and then I want to use it for milchigs. Or I want to bake challah at the same time. But this is at the same time. We'll talk about it afterwards, one after the other, afterwards. So, I want to bake, or shuas again, I want to warm up this challah. It's frozen. I want to stick it into the oven. My oven's on over yom. I want to stick it into the oven. There's fleishigs there. I want to stick it in and say, okay, but I'm using this for my milchah gemil. So is that a problem or not a problem? So halacha is, it is a problem. Because he said, l'chadchila reicha is an issue. Halacha says that the definition of l'chadchila means going and using it for a milchah gemil is l'chadchila. I'm now going and I'm designated for this purpose. Once the food is done, the food is done. So if I have milchah deflations together, say b'di yabed, they're both mutter. But over here, we didn't get to the b'di yabed part. I can use it for deflations. So I'm stuck. I have nothing to do with it. So the only eitzah would be if I have no other way to get a challah for this milchah gemil. And the only way I can eat the milchah gemil is eating the challah with the milchiks, then it would be mutter. So what I could do is I could have it for the milchah gemil. I can't eat it with milchiks. I could have it in the milchah gemil. I cannot eat it with milchiks. I could eat my challah and then stop eating challah and then eat milchiks. That would be okay. Again, the scenario. Now let's give them the scenario again. So a person wants to put into the oven where there's open fleishigs, wants to put in a cake, a challah, or something of that sort, and use that with milchiks. You may not use that with milchiks, the chadchila, unless they have no other way to have the meal, and the milchiks that I'm eating must be eaten with bread. You know, it's something which the only way I can eat the milchiks is with the bread, and I have no other way to get another type of bread. So then, that's a bit yavid. So then, it's going to be mutter, right? Is this clear? Yeah, we're good. Yes.
Regardless of the fact that the challah would be covered, it doesn't make a difference.
Challah is covered, then it's fine.
1 second. So you're saying if challah has, so just that's the answer. Then.
You can cover it also, but if I want to have a challah open,
but wouldn't that be a better solution just to cover the challah?
Whatever you want.
But if it's raw dough, then you first bake the challah.
Yeah, depending on what you're doing. If you have a challah which is just warming up, you can do that. But raw dough, I think it's pretty hard to bake like that. Right. But you're right. If the scenario lends itself to cover it, hey, cover it. Is that a problem? Okay. So that's the only place where Reicha is going to hit you. That's the only place where Reicha is going to be an issue, is you're talking about doing both at the same time, which is not so common. Very rarely we're putting milk and the fleishig in the oven at the same time. Bezecha Zed, there's no issue of Reicha. So the only issue which comes after Bezecha Zed, which is the average case, that we've gotten that off the table. Now let's talk about the real issues. The real issue is milchik to fleishik, fleishik to milchik, one after the other. What do we do? So we've designated the oven as fleishik. It's a fleishik oven. I'm allowed to cook in this oven, uncovered, fleishiks without a problem. Now I want to use this oven for milchiks, milchik being, or pyre. So this is where the halacha brings forth the concept called zeya. The issue is, it's not touching. We cover the rack, so we're not touching it. So what are you worried about? You're worried about something called Zeya. Since the previous thing which was there produces steam, or the previous things which are there from before produce steam, so this steam goes up into the airspace of the oven, gets absorbed into the top of the oven, then you come along with your milchuga thing and say, okay, I cook my milchuga thing, and it also produces Zeya, goes up to the airspace. We'll get to that in a second. Now you understand where we're going. Good. Right? So we'll go up to the airspace on top, take out some of that flavor which is there in the top of the oven, and go back into the food because it's pretty closed. So therefore, since that's the whole problem, if you cook your milk that's covered, there's nothing to worry about. So if I have a fleishig oven and I use the fleishig oven for uncovered, there's no problem at all for using it afterwards for milk which is covered. It's not a problem at all. And we understand the logic behind that. It makes a lot of sense. Or, certain things, halachas that do not produce enough steam to be considered significant to be a problem. And that includes challah, that includes cake. Even though it's a batter, that amount which it produces is not enough to be considered a problem. So, if I want to take my fleishig oven, assuming that the oven again, I'm not touching the racks. You know, I don't have any problem with touching the racks. The only issue was the issue of Zeya. So I want to put in a challah afterwards. That challah is not considered to be a problem because it doesn't produce any Zeya. So there's no way, it's not making any contact with that thing which is absorbed in the walls or in the top of the oven.
Does Zeya dissipate when the oven cools? It's always still in the oven.
It's a very good question. There's two areas where we worry about Zeya. I will get back to your question, Lina, and that will address that question. Now, the question you're going to ask me is, what in the world do you mean that certain things don't produce zeya? You know, you say, well, cake doesn't, you know, you take a cake out of the oven and there's a nice little, you see the steam rising out of it. So no, it's not significant. Number one, when you open the oven door and that whoosh of steam comes out, that's not what we're worried about. Because that's because of the change of the temperature that it's producing that. You know, there is a certain amount. That's not what we're talking about. In the oven itself, it's producing steam, even under the circumstances of the oven itself, where there is hot oven. So, which many things will not produce a lot of steam, because how much steam are you going to produce if the air above it is also warm? So it goes from there to there, so how much vapor does the vapor condense? So that's not really such a problem. So, and the fact that you see it coming out when you open the door is not a problem. And since the door is open, it dissipates. It doesn't go up inside the oven. So that we're not worried about. But the fact that the air, once it's an open space, that the zeya is not contained, it dissipates, and that's not a problem. What about you, if some of you still have your lights inside of your oven? You know, we took it out because of the... But in case you would have that, and you look and you see steam coming up, so Rav Moshe says, if you actually see steam coming out of this item, this solid item, whatever it is, it would be a problem. The solution is, don't look. Now, you all know that rule. Don't look, right? So, this is the concept of the loch again. The loch says the same concept. Don't look. You're not going to look. Don't look. Better not to look. You know, keep your eyes shut when you're looking at the oven. You know, like, you know, just don't look in the oven, please. You know, you won't have to worry about anything. Okay. So, if you want to cook... You want to cook something milchiks after the fleishigs, or you want to cook something pariv or bake something parik after the fleishigs. The fleishigs is uncovered, so there is zeya from the fleish again, but there's no zeya on the milk again. We're not worried about it. So a person, as long as the oven is clean, we don't have a problem of using it from fleishigs and then for milchiks afterwards if the milchiks are covered. Now there are certain milchiks which you need to cook. To bake, uncovered. That's, you know, part of the process. The recipe doesn't work if it's covered. So now, what's supposed to happen? So there's a concept in halacha called kashering. So we're talking about the person who does not have a self-clean oven. Self-clean oven lends itself to kashering in a very wonderful way. Solves a lot of problems. There are two issues, or three issues, which come up with the kashering issue of a non-self-cleaning oven. A self-cleaning oven takes care of any of the bad. The first thing you have to do when you want to kasher anything, you want to kasher a pot got dirty, so you have to clean it. It has to be clean. So your oven also has to be clean. If you want to kasher it, it's a non-self-cleaning oven, you have to clean out your oven. We know that the same way if you want to kasher a pot, or you want to kasher your sink for Pesach, you have to wait 24 hours since the last time it was used. So here it is, it's two days before Shavuos, and you realize you haven't made the cheesecake yet, and you have a very thin... the person seemed to assume... I have to tell you, I'm an absolute Amor Oretz when it comes to food. I know how to eat it. But when it comes to baking it, they say cheesecake is considered not a dry food, it's considered a wet food. And it produces zeya. That's the assumption in halacha. Don't ask me. Maybe your recipe is different. I don't know what recipe they were referring to. That's what I've seen. A few people have said that they look at a cheese Danish is probably dry, and a cheesecake is wet. And your ladies will figure out why. A lasagna is considered usually a wet food. There's a lot of liquid in lasagna. Some people, my wife says to me that ziti, she thinks ziti, we were discussing it, based on the criteria I gave her, ziti is considered a dry food. Probably depending on your recipe, again, how much you're putting in there, like how much cottage cheese, how much ricotta cheese, how much the other cheeses. Pizza, by the way, is considered a dry food. Okay? The fact that it has the cheese on top and has the oil, but it's, again, it doesn't become liquid, you know, it softens, but it doesn't become mamash, it's not a liquid. So, 24 hours, but it's 2 days before Pesach. You know, it's 24 hours. It's a headache. You know, when it's 2 days before Shavuos, and you got to get this done and that done and this done and that. It's 24 hours. It's not always available, but you need 24 hours to kasher something from milchiks to fleishigs. Unless it's self cleaning, you need 24 hours. There are some places in which get away without 24 hours. It is a big mile you need 24 hours. You know, somebody tells you they heard from a rabbi that he holds otherwise. I understand where he's coming from. I'll tell you why. The Devar Sinai says you need 24 hours, and the argument is because our ovens are coated with enamel. And halachically, kashering enamel is almost impossible in halacha. So what we're going to do in the oven is we're being makel, very much being makel in the oven. Once it's 24 hours, it's dealing with the Issa Derabbanan, it's much easier to be makel on that. You're dealing with less than 24 hours, dealing with the Issa Deraisa. It's not clear in halacha that kashering enamel works. So getting involved in a suffix Issa Deraisa is not worth it. So therefore, since we don't want to burn a Gehenim, so we wait 24 hours. So you have to clean it, you have to let 24 hours, and then what you do is you put it on the highest setting. For how long? An hour is preferred. Bidi Evid, you're going to be half an hour on the highest setting, broil the highest setting, whatever it is. You set it on the highest setting for an hour, and now your oven is now kosher. It's no longer fleishig, now you can use it for milchigs. When you're finished, you're going to do the same thing back. Assuming you have 24 hours after your milchigs to be able to turn it back. So a person should be ahead of the game if they want to do that. There are some places which suggest that it's even better if you could put a pot of water in there. Well, on the highest setting, let the water put out the zeya. And that the same way we have a rule by kashering, the way it goes in, this way it comes out. So the zeya now going out through the oven will take out any zeya which is in there and kasher it. And that is the preferred thing to do in halacha. It's not required. Okay. Let's say you decided that it's not going to work. You don't have 24 hours. It says, okay, so then you pull out, the solution is, of course, a part of a cheesecake, right? It's a foodie cheesecake. And but it's a liquid. So now you're dealing with a part of food, but it's a liquid, right? So what do you do over there? So there, already you're dealing with parv, then you do have a solution. You don't have to wait 24 hours. You can kasher without waiting 24 hours. You're dealing with a knot. There's reasons why that's true in halacha, but that is there, 24 hours will no longer be necessary. So if I want to now use my oven for a liquid parv of food, which I then want to be able to use with milchiks, then I do not need to wait 24 hours. I can clean it and wait 24 hours and not kasher, or I can kasher and not wait 24 hours. I have an option, whatever one I want to do, I can do those two options. So we're good? So if you want to have a milk like a cheesecake, something of that sort, you need 24 hours. If you want to have a part of a cheesecake, you do not need to wait 24 hours, even though it's a liquid.
Just kasher without waiting 24 hours. Just clean it?
Clean and kasher. Yeah.
Clean and kasher in the high setting.
High setting, right.
You can't kasher without cleaning, it won't work for something like that?
No. Unless it's a self-cleaning. Okay. Okay. So, we've come up with that solution. If you have a self-cleaning oven, now I do want to point out, this eitza of going from milchus to fleishus back and forth is something you should not do on a regular basis. The Rambam says, because we're always worried you're not going to wait 24 hours. You're going to have to wait 24 hours. So that first, you shouldn't do it. Theoretically, I can own one pot. And as long as I don't mind skipping a day for food, I could have fleishes on Sunday and milchus on Tuesday and fleishes on Thursday and, on Shabbos. And, I can directly do that. Just keep kashering my pot from one to the other. Rambam says, don't do that because you're afraid you're going to forget. Next thing you know, you're having fleishes on Sunday and milchus on Monday. Right? You wait your 24 hours. So over here you need 24 hours, so you should not be doing this on a regular basis. So occasionally it's okay, don't do it on a regular basis. If you have a self-cleaning oven, that works in a different process called libun, not hagola. You do not need to clean it, you do not need to wait 24 hours, and you can do it as much as you want back and forth.
Really? Totally? Back and forth?
Yes, they've seen it like that, because it works in the process of libun. And the whole reason why you have to wait 24 hours is because you shouldn't do it regularly is because you're afraid you're going to wait and not wait 24 hours. Well, but here you don't need to wait 24 hours. So, okay, just enjoy yourself. So if you ever have an option of getting a new oven and it costs you a little bit extra, get a self-cleaning oven. It's just Pesach, you want to kasher your oven, self-cleaning oven. Milk, inflation, self-cleaning oven. Once you're kashering that, by the way, it takes care of the ban on the grates. You can throw in the grates if you have a gas range. You can throw in the grates in your gas range into there also, and kasher those also. It's a wonderful system. Great. It takes care of your, no pun intended. Um, so self-cleaning will solve all your problems. There is something called a continuous cleaning oven. I've never seen one. I've just heard about it. Has anybody here ever seen one? What? You've seen it. They are a major headache. Never get one. They're a major headache in halacha because there clearly is enamel involved, and it's a real big mess. What to do with a continuous cleaning oven? Continuous cleaning oven and self-cleaning oven are two different worlds. Don't get involved in it. Okay. We're good so far? Yeah. Other areas where Zeya comes up. Where the potential issue was where Zeya comes up. So the first area is we're talking about in our oven. So if you would have uncovered liquidy fleishigs, you know, you're making a chicken with gravy, and then you put Zeya into the oven, and now you come along and you do the same thing with milchix, so you're going to have a big problem. So the only etza is that you cover your milchix or you kasher the oven. What about on top of the range top?
Stove top,
thank you. I'm not sure the standard. When I grew up, that was called the range. That was called the range, you know.
Yeah, they're two separate things. Right. A stove is on the oven underneath it.
Uh-huh.
The range is on top of the counter.
Okay, fine. Very good. Thank you for explaining that to me. I promise I will forget it. And I will make the same mistake again. What? All right. Okay, so... I have my, four. Usually, you have four burners. Some people have, the fireplace have the fifth burner, whatever it is. You have your four burners, and I want to use milchix and fleishigs at the same time. Is that a problem? I see steam coming up, and there's this hood on top. And is the problem? Is there any problem with the hood? Or I have a cabinet on top, or I have an oven on top, and there's all this wonderful steam coming up from my chicken soup. It's putting up all this beautiful, delicious smelling steam. And what's the status of my oven now? Which is on top of the, you have a double oven. What's the status of the items inside of the cabinet on top? So there's steam there. So halacha says like this: steam does not get absorbed unless there's heat. So if by the time the steam reaches this item, the steam is no longer yatsa lettuce boy, which happens very fairly quickly, it's not going to get absorbed. If the item itself is yet hot, so then you have a problem. So if I have my steam going up and the item at which it's reaching on top is also hot, yatsa lettuce boy, so now I have a problem. Even though the steam has cooled off, but the item is hot. But the average case, you don't say you have a cabinet on top, or you have, so that's not a problem, because the time it reaches the cabinet, the time it reaches the hood, it's not yatsa lettuce boy anymore. So it's not going to get absorbed. If you would have, you're making having over a cadre of people, an army, you get this big pot and it's like 3 inches from the hood, yes, you're going to have a problem. Right? If you have a very low hood, yes, you're going to have a problem. Okay, so now you have these new fancy homes, they have the islands in the middle with the range over there. It's probably a range in the middle, right? And you have place to hang your ladles and all your wonderful things, and you have all your ladles hanging there. Some are milchix, some are fleishig. One side is milchix, one side is fleishig. You're very careful, and the steam is coming up onto your milchix and fleishig ladles, right? Right. Well, the answer is again, the ladles are not hot. By the time steam gets to it, the steam is cooled off also. So that would solve the problem. Not 100%. There's a prima gadum. Prima gadum says that besides the fact that the steam actually gets absorbed, there actually is a layer of steam on top. So even if it doesn't get absorbed, it's still there. Now, it's very easy. You can just clean it off before you use it. You wash it off and you won't have a problem. But you have to remember to wash it off. And then he says, if you, by nature, do not usually wash your ladles before you use them, you should not hang your ladles in such a way that they're going to be receiving steam coming out from beneath them. Okay, so now let's go back to our cabinet. Okay, so the cabinet, if in your cabinet you're storing containers of, my wife has, that's where she keeps the sugar and the flour and those things, right above, the, she keeps it right over there. So good, so if worse comes to worse, it'll make a layer on the outside of the, so this container has a layer on the outside of milchix steam or fleishig steam. It's not a kosher issue because it's cold. And you never use the container itself, you use the contents of the container, so that's not a problem. you have a cup there and you store your cups over there or your plates over there, and that, you know, you, and sometimes it's open and you see steam going in, your plates are now covered with a layer of whatever was that steam was. So the Prima Gaudium says you should not put yourself in a situation where you're going to have above, where steam could hit it, and Sili Sheva's question, so that you have two issues. You have being absorbed, and absorbed in these heat, but there's also an issue of that there's actual ba'en there, which you need to clean off. So you should, it's better not to get yourself in that situation where, not everybody agrees to this problem of the Prima Gaudium, but the Prima Gaudium does say it, a lot of other person can bring it down. So definitely we're dealing with trying to set this up in the best way we can. So we should watch out for that. Okay, so now, yeah.
This is the only time there's something above, so say I'm cooking the fish, it's something on the stove, and there happens to be something next to the stove. So that if it's not going up, I don't have to...
Usually say it goes up, it doesn't go out, right. Okay. Now, but the scenario in which I could have your problem is, so I'm cooking, again, I'm having this big army of people over here, and I'm cooking my large fleishig pot, and meanwhile, my kid needs something milchig. I have to cook up some, so I have a little pot of milchigs right next to this big pot of fleishig. So you see the steam going up and going off, goes up, and it spreads out right there and hits the side of your chicken soup. Right, so that's a problem. You know, you don't want to be in that situation where as the steam's coming up, it's right there right next to this. You don't want to put a small pot. They're two equal-sized pots. So great, you know, they're both going up in the right direction. They're not going towards each other. But if one is lower and one is higher, so you would theoretically have an issue which you want to stay out of. Obviously, you want to try and dump it too close. Anyway, you don't want things boil over, things splatter, all those wonderful things that we happen in the kitchen that... I usually call my wife when that happens. What are we supposed to do now? I know it's a problem. Just, what do we do now? Right, okay. Say you have an oven. You have an oven above. So as long as the oven door is closed, nothing's going inside the oven. You would want to try and avoid, if possible, if you see the steam coming off from one of your pots, don't open the oven door at that point in time. You don't want the steam going inside, and that's going to be a problem. Okay. Another area which you would want to deal with in the ranged, okay, stovetop, okay, not range, okay? If you have an oven beneath, it vents out. Where does it vent out to? So some of them, you know, the ones that stand on the ground, so the vent goes out to the back, and that's great. Some of them vent forward, right behind your pot. They come out, like, right behind the pot. It vents through the back burner. So if the back burner is on, it's not a problem. Halacha says fire burns steam. So the back burner is on. The fire which is there will burn that steam and prevent it from... If it's ending through the burner, it's not a problem. Some of them vent through the burner. Some of the you have the oven below and you have the stovetop on top. And the vent which lets the steam out of the oven, so you have your fleishig oven and you're cooking fleishigs in there and there's fleishig azeya coming out. If it vents through the back burner and the back burner is on, that's not a problem. If it vents through the back, not through the burner, but through the back of it, and it has like an opening... There's like that little opening about that big, which the steam is coming out of, right behind your pot. You don't want to put a milchika pot there. You can put a fleishika pot there. You don't want to put a milchika pot there because...
What about a milchika pot if the steam comes out right there? You have a pot right there?
And the steam is coming out from fleishika.
Fleishika steam through the burner?
If the burner is on, it's not a problem because the burner burns the steam.
So you can cook a milchika thing and the fleishika thing can be in the oven?
Right.
The steam coming right into the...
Because it will come, luckily it burns it before it gets to the pot. But if it's through the burner, if it's behind the burner, then you have a problem. Because then it's venting it right there. Okay, spices. So I want to put something, I want my salt shaker, I'm making my flesh, making my chicken soup, and I take the salt shaker and I shake it in, right? So there's this steam coming up. So the rule was that the bubby didn't do that. She would pour it into her hand, and she'd pour it from her hand. The reason why she did that is to solve this problem. You don't end up with milchiga or fleishiga spices. But if you pour from the salt shaker, and there's a steam right there, so the heat probably is not a problem. It's probably not going to be that you're not putting your hand right there with the outside lettuce boy. But according to the Prima Gaudium, you have the be'en issue. You have that there's still this layer of moisture which is there. Which goes into your salt. So you end up with theoretically fleishiga salt in that situation. So again, the solution for that is don't, you know, that's where the world of the zhmenya came from, you know. You put a zhmenya in your hands, you throw it in, right? Zhmenya means a handful in Yiddish, or in some language, I don't know what it is, right? What will be, okay, so now we're just talking about that. I want to move away from the stovetop for a second. The same issue. I put my meat down on my plate. Nice steam coming out of the meat. Shake the ketchup onto the meat. Right, so, you know, these kids squeezing the. So if you have a home with little kids, you need two ketchups. You need more, because kids will never, they can be guaranteed to touch the ketchup bottle to the food. You know, the ketchup bottle will. If you don't have two, you guaranteed you will have meat and lasagna and everything on the top of that ketchup bottle. That's when you wash the ketchup bottle off every single time you have to use it, which you do not want to do that. That's very time consuming. If it's an issue, I'll cover the price of buying the extra ketchup bottle. Get a milk sugar bottle and a flesh sugar bottle. Okay, but now we're dealing with adults, and they've finally been trained by the time they're about 25 or so, not if they're yeshiva bachurim, not to touch the meat. At 25, they get married, and the wife finally teaches them they shouldn't touch the meat. Okay, but what about the steam? So I'm squeezing my ketchup bottle or my mustard, you know, and there's this steam come out of my. I just made this turkey burger, whatever it is. It's a nice steamy thing, and is that a problem? Pasha is not. It's a minimal amount of steam. It's an very open area. The temperature is not there. That getting absorbed that level is probably not a problem. Again, if you could do, you have two, why not? Okay. You have a hot water dispenser. So you put, one guy puts in his hot cocoa with milk in it, coffee with it. He makes a coffee and there's milk in the coffee and you put your hot water there and all the steam comes up right under the dispenser. Of course, they put it right under the dispenser. And now you want to make your, bouillon soup, or something like that with this hot water. So you want to make something flashy. So, the argument goes that while the water is going out, nothing is going in. There's nothing getting absorbed, and there's just, you could just wipe off the outside of it, wash off the outside of it, and you don't have a problem. This is one issue you have. You want to use, if somebody's is working or it goes into a public place, there's treifa, which is getting involved over there. This shiloh, which always comes up along the same lines, so your cholent is drying out, it's Shabbos, and your cholent is drying out. Well, it's not a problem. I have a percolator, and the percolator has hot water in it, so I'll pour it from the percolator into the cholent, and I'll save my cholent. I can do chazara, it's covered, so I take the cholent off, and it's fully cooked, it's still hot, it's covered fire, I take it out and intention to return, I don't let go, I'm a good boy, a good girl, right? I do everything I'm supposed to do, take it off, put it right under there, because, the shiloh, you'll use the cup in between, it's a shiloh. So I put it right there, and this wonderful flesh of steam goes right into my percolator. Now, so good, I take care of it, Shabbos morning, I take care of it. My husband gets up in the morning and says, he would love to have a cup of coffee before he goes to davening. With milk, of course. Well, now what's supposed to happen? I just made my percolator flashing, didn't I? We had this mice that happened in Tells that one neighbor, it was Carla, one neighbor, his cholent was drying out. He went to the next neighbor, did that. The neighbor took him to Beis Din because he made his percolator. Who needs a flashing percolator?
Buy a new one for the person.
What? Well, he went to took him to the Bezdin, mitzvah him. He has to buy him a new. He mama took him to the Bezdin. Remember, I just sat in the Bezdin. Come to the Bezdin. His tzvi is like you're masik my percolator. There's also things a flesh of percolator. The percolator have one function in life. By yeshiva man is coffee with milk. Right? It was considered a masik as far as he was concerned. The lachos he's potter. Okay, why is he potter? So what are you worried about? So you're worried about the. First of all, by the way, you can put it into another cup and then pour it from the cup into the and put it back on. There's plenty that's acceptable. So you can put a cup under the percolator, get your hot water, pour it into the cholent. Don't stir the cholent. Put it back on, and that's okay. Don't stir the cholent. That's a major no-no. But regardless of putting the water in, you can do that, even from a cup in between. But even if you didn't, and even if you put it close enough, so you put it far down, again, so, as long as it's direct, there's no problem of visual issues, and the steam will dissipate by the time it gets to the percolator. You don't have to hold it right next to the percolator. You can put it, down here and bring it up here. It's not a problem. But even if you didn't do that, which is what happened, where the person put it right next to the percolator, it's not a problem. The ban, you can wash off. the ban on the spigot, run the water through and it'll take the ban out. That what's absorbed into the walls of the percolator, you know, there's so many arguments that it's a not or not. There's so many reasons why it's not a problem. You can make your coffee, put milk in it without a problem. It's not a problem. And it's just the only issue you have is the ban. You should run the water through one time before you use it. Okay. Let's talk about microwaves a little bit, and let's talk about what do you do if you're at somebody's house who's not doing everything I just told you to do. You know, you go into your Tante Bella for Yom Tov, and Tante Bella is a stark sign. You know, she lived to 120 years old. Tante Bella doesn't do any of this stuff. You know that's not what her rabbi told her in 1933. You don't have to do this stuff. And you know, newfangled rabbis, you don't have to do this stuff. Now what do you do? Right? So she serves you dinner. Tante Bella is Tante Bella. You can't say another Tante Bella. Now what do you do? Okay, so that is a problem which you have to talk about. But let's talk about microwaves, and we'll talk about Tante Bella last. Okay, everybody has a Tante Bella, right? Some form or other. Some microwaves, because they're small, the Zay issue becomes more significant. The best thing in the world is to have two microwaves. If you have an option, you can get two microwaves, you know, toaster ovens, they're hard to clean, all those things, they're small, the Zay becomes more significant, it's hot, right? The best thing is two microwaves. If you can't get two microwaves, for whatever reason, there's no room for two microwaves, you live in the efficiency, you know, and you put the bed up in the morning to put on the table, you know, it's one of those places, right? You know, that it's very tight, there's no room for, or you can't afford two microwaves, you know, right now the budget is very tight. So again, the H will be covering. So you can have one open and one should be covered. Now, good, so now, can you kosher a microwave? Would be the next step, okay? So can you kosher a microwave? Okay, because we said, okay, now the covering, I suggest two coverings. And halacha, whatever you need, double wrap I want to point out, it has to be two separate layers. You can't take one piece of foil and do it all the way around two times, it's double wrapped. It's one piece of foil. It has to be two separate pieces. I want to point that out. And it's referred in halacha, if you can, that one of the layers should be hard, at least semi-hard. Preferably, it's not two layers of foil is not the preferred way of doing it. If you could put, when we do double wrapped, so you take a second aluminum pan, you put an aluminum pan on the bottom, so you have two aluminum pans.
Not microwave, though.
Not microwave, no, I was talking about in the oven. And then, you know, on top, so we do heavy duty foil, something like that, which is going to give it a little more substance. There should be a little more substance to one of the layers at least. It should be two layers. Okay, so but the eighth in the microwave is you can do double layers. What's a double layer? The halacha says there's no transfer of any flavor, any taste, without the medium of liquid, of moisture. So we say even if there's moisture out here and there's moisture in here, in between the two layers is dry. So nothing can happen. Nothing will happen. That's the logic behind double wrap. That's why you can have your double wrapped kosher dinner on your airplane dinner, which is being warmed up in the trefa oven in the airplane, and that's not a problem because it's double wrapped. There's no transfer of liquid over there. Can you kosher a microwave? Now this is a big machlokes with you kosher a microwave. Before you get to the issue, can you kosher a microwave? And the question is, do you need to kosher a microwave? Can you just clean it out? Is that enough? So I heard this from my brother-in-law that Reb Heinemann pointed out. I think it's a very good chop. Microwaves work different. You know, microwave, the radiation heats the food, and then the food generates from the food, the heat radiates from the food onto the walls. Some microwaves, the walls do not get hot. Some of them they do, depending on how it's made, how close it is, etc. If the walls do not get hot, there's never an absorption into the walls. So you don't have to kosher the walls of the microwave. So whenever you're going to kosher, you're going to clean first. So you clean it. Now I cleaned it. I'm worried. Next issue, I'm worried about something absorbed in the walls. Well, if the walls never get hot, there's nothing absorbed in the walls. So what do you do? If you want to know, if you want to kosher a microwave, the first thing you do is you put in a cup of water, something of that sort, at high. Let it go for a few minutes. Take it out and touch the walls carefully. You shouldn't burn yourself. If all the walls are not hot, you don't have to kosher anything. I mean, you have to make sure that it's very clean, and that's it. And now you can use it for the other gender because nothing has been absorbed. You're not worried about something taking anything out of the absorbed in the walls. If it does get hot, now you have to kosher it.
What about the bottom?
All of them. You know, any area, sides, top. That's going to be an issue in any direction because it's so small.
Let's say the walls don't get hot.
Right.
Then you assume that the glass plate gets hot.
The glass making is hard probably from the directly from the food.
So
you should have if you want to change, that is a good point. You're going to need to put some layer in between the food, whatever you're putting in the second other gender, a layer in between. It should be clean. Put a layer in between, or if possible, have you can order a second tray from the company. Mikra then again, well, it's clear, it's dry, and as long as it's dry, one layer of mikra then is enough. Again, since moisture sips down, there probably two is good. That's why mikra, because there's so much moisture in there, two is always better, because otherwise it's going to run out. You know, two layers is much better.
If the walls are,
you don't need anything on top. If it gets hot, so then you have to kasher. The way you kasher it again is so you wait, you clean it out, wait 24 hours, and you put in a cup of water and let it boil. Just let it go and get all that steam out of there, and that will kasher out the microwave. Okay. Okay, Tanta Bella. We're good so far? Right? Yes. Once you wait 24 hours, it doesn't make a difference. It's like any time you kasher, mikra, then once you, since you waited 24 hours, the flavor which is not going to go into that pot, cup, whatever it is, will not create any halachic issues. Right, even so, yeah. It's an interesting thing, but that's you know, we're not going to involve spending a lot on this, but that's the halacha. Okay. So you know your Tanta Bella was told you can use oven for fleishes and for milk. It's not a problem. You use not together. You know, of course, you know you do fleishes first and then you do milk afterwards. She's from that generation. They clean the oven. That's not what you're worried about. Again, it's not an issue. Her pots and pans are make us look in shame. They're beautifully clean. That's not the problem. But the problem is what I'll say. So let's say for argument's sake that. She was told by her rabbi, just wait 24 hours. You don't have to kasher anything, just wait 24 hours and use it. You can be samech, that's not a problem. In other words, if she will do that, assuming the oven is clean, she waited 24 hours, you can eat that food. Milk is the flesh is the milk, you can, with waiting 24 hours, there's enough to be samech, that it's not a problem, that you can be, you can use it. If she didn't wait 24 hours, that comes a little more problematic, and you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi what to do under the circumstances, if somebody has that issue. But if they're waiting 24 hours, even then, I can tell you there's what to rely on. It's possibly mutter, but that I think you should ask an actual shayla. But if the situation is, I happen to know somebody that they were told by their rav, you know, X amount of years ago, they were told that, you know, wait 24 hours, that's all you need to do. And that's, there's enough to rely on that's okay. Okay, I think that's covered everything that I wanted to cover. I probably forgot a line here or there that I wanted to say. Oh, there's something I wanted to say. One other thing. Another example of Recha, that's I wanted to tell you. An example of Recha is an issue. So you're making challah for Shabbos, and you make a full shear, so you take a challah dough for the challah. The challah which you're going to burn. So what do you do? Where you stick it in the oven at the bottom and you burn it. It's a problem of recha. So even though they're both dry, so with the chachil you should not do that. So the best thing to do is not to do it together with anything else in the oven. If you want to burn your challah, the hafrashas challah that you take off, you want to burn your hafrashas challah. Or you could cover it. Right, but you do it together open, you just stick on the bottom, let it burn, which is a great idea, like, you know, baking anyway, that itself is not the best idea. Okay. Yes, please. Is it clean? Are you talking about that there's actually
clean,
or is it just that something's been absorbed? You mean is that your question?
Yes.
Right. Assuming that it's clean, so chances are probably it's mutter. You know, if it comes up, somebody should ask a shayla, but you know, the chances are in most cases it's going to be mutter. There's what to be semachan that it's mutter. I know that, I remember there's a Rav in Cleveland who gave the shir, and he said, you know, he started saying it's mutter, which is that thicker than that it's mutter. And he got this human cry from the lady, what do you mean it's mutter? How can it be mutter? No, 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 no. Right. And he said, ladies, I'm not a Reform rabbi, and he has a beard about twice as long as mine. He said, you might think I'm a Reform rabbi. I'm not a Reform rabbi. He says, I'm an Orthodox rabbi. And it's meeker than it's probably mutter. You should ask a shayla, but the chances are, usually it'll be mutter. Logic behind it, whatever it is, but usually it's mutter. Yeah. You know, I've searched for many years to find somebody who puts a real criteria down to define what's called dry and what's called liquid. And I have not found it. And I felt very good today because I called my postdoc in Cleveland and I asked him, he says, I don't know. I said, oh, Baruch Hashem, I'm not the only person who doesn't know, you know, and he's the person who Taka knows, you know. So, my theory is, and I can't tell you, just some of the different examples from Gimon and Halacha, my theory is, you have a food, you bake it, you cook it, whatever, now it's dry. You know, it's moist, I'm saying, but it's not liquidy. It becomes non-liquidy for one of two reasons. One is because all of the moisture, the liquid which is there, boiled out, and one is because it boiled in. You know, it absorbed the way it was supposed to, and it functioned the way it was supposed to in the batter. So if it functions the way it's supposed to in the batter, that's not called a liquidy thing. It's called a dry thing, which is, you know, is in the process of going solidifying. That's why your cake batters, etc. The liquid there is not, you know, there's an excess liquid which has to boil out, and that's why it dries out. That is, it combines together, it does what it's supposed to do, and it does its thing, and it becomes a cake. Whereas you have gravy in your chicken, there's actual liquid there. It might end up being dry because it all boiled out. That's, you know, it's a different product. Now, you know, I can't tell you the science is 100% correct. That's my theory. So, I don't understand how cheesecake works in that, because I don't understand cheesecake, you know, what it's supposed to look like anyway. The chashil and the bidiyavid. I've never studied a cheesecake batter to tell you why I understand it. So, assuming that's so, I think that, you know, that even, I can't tell you what a banana batter looks like, a cake batter. Banana cake batter looks like, but I'm assuming it would be the same thing.
It's still eat that,
right. That'd be my assumption.
Our cheesecake that you're cooking,
right. In the case we right, in the case which we gave, which you didn't have, your.
Even if, right. If was
No. If you kashered it, the case I guess. Right. So now you do that. So you couldn't have it with milchus. You could have it before milchus or after milchus, but you can't have it with milchus.
Any containers, any power cans that you baked it in,
there are some poskim who are concerned about that. Not to make so much of a difference, but you know the applications. But the yes. Give me a full sentence, please. I think Tupperware is good. I think you should buy it. I think Tupperware is bad. You shouldn't buy it. What about Tupperware?
Okay, like in Dorit's example of banana cake. So now she can do the milchuk meal. It doesn't matter if it goes in a milchuk Tupperware or a flesh Tupperware. Can it go
at home? I mean afterwards for storage
but
purposes?
Cool. Well,
no, it doesn't make sense.
Banana cake.
Right.
So it doesn't
matter. No, once it's storage, is not a problem, right? Yeah, ladies, we're good? Yes.
About draining a pot, like noodles or whatever, into the sink and then the steam goes back up into the pot?
Assuming the sink is clean. Assuming the sink is clean, the best eitza is to try and prevent it, but assuming the sink is clean, it's not going to be a problem for the other. Again, there's different reasons why that's true, but the Eitzah, which my wife does, which I think, I hope I'm saying over correctly, because she runs the cold water right, at the same time, that, you know, that it minimizes the problem, but it's I don't think it's a problem.
Should you be careful not to have other dishes in the sink if you're cleaning something?
Where it's going to hit the actual flow of the liquid's going to hit it, or are you talking about the steam?
The steam will go up and it'll hit the dishes.
Let's see, 1 second. You're talking about it was, well, I guess, let me go back a step. You're talking about there was actual milchik.
Say you're draining a milchik pot, and there's milchik dishes in the sink, and there's like a rack, but the sink itself is draped. And then the steam is coming up from the bottom of the sink and going onto the dishes.
The steam goes up and down.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There's a rack in the sink, and you have, let's say you have like cups or something.
But as you're pouring it, pouring down, but the steam is only going up.
Right, but it's going up onto the dishes.
And off the food deck.
Right, but you assume it never touched the trafe area because it only goes up.
It touched the bottom of the sink. The bottom of the sink.
But you assume that steam goes up.
See, the hot water is going
onto the sink. The answer is, it's not going to be also b'diavad. I would probably say it's better not to get involved in it, but b'diavad, it's a chalik sin immersion, and the others, immersion holds, it's not, it's mutter. So, you're on cold water, you don't get involved in it, it's a chalik. Right, so.
What, if you have like hot noodles, you're saying?
Right, you're pouring out from the, you're pouring through the calendar. You're draining through the noodles through the calendar, so you have the hot, liquid going into the so it's draining into the sink. Hot liquid is hitting the sink and making all this wonderful steam coming up.
And that goes back off the food.
That goes back onto the food or onto the right. So, is it a problem? So Rav Moshe says it's not a problem. I mean, I don't want to get involved in Rav Moshe has a psak and that. But there's Diane White has a chip where he holds it is a problem, and therefore if you can get around the problem, if you run cold water, see, even if there's steam coming up, that steam is not going to be problematic. It as long as the temperature in the sink itself is not, yeah, it's lettuce bowl, the steam which is being produced is not a problem. So as long as you keep the temperature of the sink cool enough that it's not yatsa lettuce bowl, you're okay. So you have cold water running onto the sink, you're okay. If it does, I would pass like a marsh anyway, that's still mutter. So that's why if you ask Michelle, but yeah, but it's also mutter, but I feel like I don't think it involved in it. Yes?
Capturing a microwave?
Yes.
If it
needs to be koshered, yes. So it's the same rule in general as any koshering. It's not like the self-clean oven.